From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. More Idaho Matters right now. 7 storytellers from 7 parts of Idaho are coming together next week to tell their intensely personal stories of their lives here in the Gem State. It's Story Story Night's latest production, and it's called Starry Story Night, The Big Dipper, because there are 7 major stars in the Dipper, just like there are 7 storytellers offering a point of light from across Idaho. So we wanted to hear some of those stories. So joining us now are Jody Eichelberger, the artistic director of Story Story Night, Michael Riley, a retired teacher who lives in Potlatch, Blair Williams, the owner of the Art Spirit Gallery, and Jessica Joy, a musician and creator of Classical Queens, Our Time. I want to welcome all of you to the program.
Good morning, afternoon.
Thank you.
Early afternoon, Jody. So Jody, tell us about Starry Story Night. What's this going to look like?
Well, I'm super excited to be with you today because it means we're almost there. Story Story Night was named the cultural ambassador a year ago, and this is our halfway point, kind of the apex of our term as cultural ambassador. So we wanted to do something really special. And we had the opportunity also from the Idaho Humanities Council to reach across Idaho, which is not what we normally do, and bring these storytellers to Boise next Tuesday on the top floor of JUMP, and have them all share their stories together. And it looks different than our normal show because, you know, our audiences are used to seeing a storyteller get up, share their whole story, sit back down. But in this production, all 7 storytellers are on the stage and they tell their stories together. We weave in and out of each individual voice. And the other thing that's different about this is we have Jessica Joy's beautiful Classical Queens Quartet supporting the stories with music. So we don't usually underscore our stories. And we may even have some projections behind us, adding a little celestial atmosphere. So that's a visual element that we don't usually have as well. So this is really the biggest production that we've done in and we're also launching our 15th anniversary this year. It's a big moment for us.
Wow, I can't believe you've been doing this for 15 years. With that said, you are bringing together 7 storytellers that you mentioned from all across Idaho. So how did you whittle it down to these 7 storytellers? I mean, in particular, when you're weaving these stories together.
Yeah, it's always very nerve-wracking for me because you're getting 7 individual stories and hoping that they connect. And this is the 4th production of this style I've done, but I'm always like, is this going to be the one where there's just no connection? we won't find it. It's just be like, bam, okay. You know, it was a little bit like, of course, all my references go back to the Muppets. It was a little bit like the Muppet movie. I was Kermit wandering around looking for people to join me on this adventure. And we did that in so many different ways. I reached out to farmers markets. I reached out to the University of Idaho in Moscow. I reached out to a fly fishing organization in Twin Falls. Like, do you have some people who, you know, maybe connect to the Big Dipper in some way or interested in coming and sharing a story? And so there wasn't any, it was really just who these individuals were and then looking for how they connect. And you know, there was nothing, an overarching plan of like, we need this type of person, this type of person, this type of person. And then I was fortunate to get invited to Jessica's preview of her show, Classical Queens, which is going to be at the Morrison Center in January. And I was blown away. And there was a line in the show about the drinking gourd, which in my research about the Big Dipper, I knew was a reference to the Big Dipper from the Underground Railroad. And so I was like, well, I mean, this is just amazing. It really is the stars playing a force here. Because that's exactly what we need. And Jessica was great to sign on and say, yeah, let's do this. Let's work together and make these things happen.
So I want to bring in the storytellers because we're lucky enough to have a few with us today. So Michael, would you mind reading us just a little bit of your story?
Yes, thanks. I appreciate that. My dad, who went to Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas, and who was a Harvard grad, a professor, a PhD, he was outside the building one day. Daisy Bates, the NAACP leader of the Little Rock 9 group, was getting harassed. And so I told my students in my class the story of how I knew my dad showing up for her and getting arrested for being drunk. Later, a student brought me a letter, a black and white photocopy, but it's from 1956 or 58. I think he just copied it off and brought it into me and said, "Hey, here, Mr. Riley, take a look at this." It was from a woman who wrote that she was visiting with Daisy Bates from New York City on that day that Ed Riley, my father, was not was visiting with Daisy Bates from New York on that day, and that Ed Riley, my father, was not drunk, like the police officer stated, Officer O'Kelly, and he was not aggressive, and he was quite a polite young man. She wrote like a two-page letter. The student found this stash of information in the University of Arkansas archives. My older brother works in the University of Arkansas archives, and he didn't even know this document existed. All those things in this letter. I just thought the letter itself was amazing. And then the student found this. My dad was always mentally ill when I knew him. He was an alcoholic. He had bipolar disorder, and he was quite broken by the time I grew up. And so this student gave me back my dad. It was an incredible gift.
So, Michael, can you tell us a little bit more about this story and how you chose it?
Arkansas and Idaho are kind of sister states. They're both beautiful, and they're rugged, and they're often rural and poor. And so I was thinking that I would share that part of my dad that I do know, because he was just, I learned so much from him about his by his actions, less so than actually having him teach me, because I just didn't really know him all that well.
So I would love to turn now to Blair. Blair, would you mind reading a bit of your story that people will hear Tuesday night?
Yes, thank you. On my way to school while on the school bus, I remember every single telephone pole being plastered with a poster with a shooting target and a cartoon of a naked Hasidic Jew running. These have been plastered up by the Aryan nations throughout our region. And at 9 years old, I thought, I don't know what that is, but I know that it's not good. At 10 years old, I can remember my father one day was home. My mom must have been in town grocery shopping. My father began screaming, "Get in the car, get in the car." We ran upstairs. "What's going on? Just get in the car." So he jumped in the back of the Jeep and he tore off across the Rimrock.
Blair, you're from Coeur d'Alene, and my understanding is that plays a really big part in your story. Can you talk to us a little bit more about that?
I think it's important to note that each of our individual narratives sort of, create a tapestry of understanding who we are. And I grew up out on the Rimrock of Hayden Lake, Idaho, which was close to the Aryan Nations. And we as a community had issues, obviously, with the Aryan Nations. But I like to believe that as a small, non-diverse community, it added great value because it ultimately forced us to ask ourselves the questions that we otherwise wouldn't have talked about. And I have these memories of being surrounded by these moments of racism and how they affected myself, my own story, my community, and my family's community or stories.
So, Jessica, we'd love to hear some of your story as well, if you can share with us.
I forgot to look at the stars last year. I was too busy exploring the world, taking chances, career building, trying to figure out romantic entanglements and myself. I was too busy to look, too excited that I finally got to reach beyond myself. And oh my goodness, I finally had the tools. And all these people were riding us back instantly, giving us access I didn't think we would ever have. It was the coolest thing. We had so many conversations with amazing historians, and my professor, she made that degree awesome. I was finally building something that seemed to be meant for me and my heart, something bigger than me. I felt my heart beat in sync with those with whom I created. Every day was chills, gratitude, and learning. It felt like it was finally my time. Time to have a voice, to be seen, to be inspired, to be free, and to realize how good this life gets.
And Jessica, you're from Boise, and talk to
Yes.
us a little bit about, this part of your story. Like, where, why was this the story you wanted to tell?
Well, my work generally centers the lives and work and music of women of color in classical music. And so for Star Story Night, I thought it would be wonderful to share my ultimate why and the deeper meaning behind my work. So I wanted to tell the stories of the women who shaped me and giving voice to them, particularly my grandmother, birth mother, and adoptive mother. And in my Nana's case, I wanted to speak about her yearning for freedom that she couldn't ever have. And so, yeah, I have learned from these women and those of classical music past that like I must push beyond what I was given to build a world that allows all of us to have safe space and to be our authentic selves.
You know, Jody, just hearing these little snippets, I mean, I can almost, you know, imagine how these will weave together, of course, with four other storytellers, but kind of take us through that process of because I've been lucky enough to have been a storyteller one time at Story Night. And I mean, it is, I think the idea that you come with and really how it evolves to what ends up on the stage, it is really a really special process.
Yeah. And the thing that's particularly different about this, as you know, from being one of our great storytellers, it's usually no notes. You're just,
yeah, right.
You know, speak from your heart. And with this one, they will be reading from a script because of the complexity of weaving the stories together. But I would say about 95% of the words are their own. There is a little bit of editing that gets done in order to connect things a little bit. But it's a combination of written submissions. All seven of the storytellers submitted writing. And I use that then to do an interview with them that we record. Just asking further questions about their written submission. Sometimes we get off on a tangent, and that tangent ends up being exactly what we needed. So from that live interview, it also adds an interesting quality to the show because you move in and out of more conversational way of talking because often we write differently than we speak. And it becomes more immediate. Sometimes it's more raw. And it gives us a little of that energy that you're used to having at Story Night, that kind of spontaneous feeling of people coming up with the words in the moment.
So Jody, as we mentioned in the earlier segment, you've woven together stories of seven storytellers into really one uninterrupted narrative. So I'm really curious about, you know, not just how you've woven the stories together, as we mentioned, but what about getting everyone together to make sure that it's, you know, moving seamlessly before yeah, Tuesday?
Right. So we had to do two different readings of the script because we couldn't find a time for all seven to log in at the same time. So we had some actors across the country, actually, that read for some of the storytellers in Boston and in California. Today you're going to hear a clip that I'm reading for Darren, who is part of the Northwestern Band of the Shoshone Nation. He got called in at the last minute to the University of Utah, so he wasn't able to read live today. But yeah, those moments we were just talking about together, about one of them in the break, that both Jessica and Michael feature some moments in Little Rock, Arkansas. And, you know, that's nothing we planned for. It just came out in the interview. And then as I'm laying the script, the stories alongside, you know, that's something I picked up on. I was like, whoa, here we are in Little Rock. They're both in Little Rock. Okay, that's a connection. Let's do that. Sometimes the more abstract or metaphoric connections, there's a section where the former interpreter of Craters of the Moon is talking about his first time camping in the crater, and he's joined by a stranger, which he can't see, he only hears, and it's this hyperventilating elk. And we paired that with a section of Blair Williams' story where she's on the beach up by Coeur d'Alene, and these different ethnic diversities join her on the beach. And the stress of that, like, oh my gosh, is it going to be okay? Is someone going to give them a bad time? So it's an interesting combination where you're trying to find this elk in the bushes in the dark, and then you're also dealing with this diversity on the beach and wondering if they're going to be harassed by your own community.
So, Jody, you know, these seven storytellers, as we mentioned, are from different parts of the state of Idaho. Normally, folks are from the Treasure Valley. Why was it important with this particular performance that you took perspective from different parts of the state?
Well, one reason is we wanted to do something a little different as the cultural ambassador, bringing people to Boise. And this seemed mm-hmm. like a good fit. Also, with the seven stars, the seven major stars in the Big Dipper, I did a little bit of research, and there was someone who had divided Idaho into seven regions. I think it was actually the Department of Fish and Game, the map that I had that was listed as seven regions. And I, you know, just kind of the number seven just hit, and we were like, hey, let's go with each star being a different region of Idaho. It seems like such a great sort of similarity between those two things. And using the Big Dipper, you know, each of the storytellers touches on that as a theme, but it really is just a way of framing all seven stories, and the geography of it became a factor as well this year, which, as you noted, is unusual for us. But it emphasizes connection, that it's not just us in the Treasure Valley that are connected, but we're connected as a whole state. It gives us a whole new perspective of identity as being Idahoans in a way that we haven't been able to do before.
Well, we're lucky enough to actually have a small sample of some of what you will hear. I mean, this is what it's going to sound like during the Starry Story Night show, which are woven together. So Jody, can you set this up for us and then we'll take a listen?
Yeah, so we still try to honor the structure of storytelling, you know, with a beginning, middle, and an end, an arc. So this excerpt is from pretty early in the show, where these storytellers are kind of identifying a conflict in their life, an issue that's unresolved. And then one of the beautiful things that we're able to do in the show is then follow that conflict through and kind of answer some of the issues that are going to be brought up in this clip.
Okay, so let's take a listen to what Jody just described for us.
I was the first student in my school district who was physically disabled to be integrated.
My dad was beaten and jailed by a police officer when he spoke up for a Black woman seeking to integrate to high school and spoke back to a cop. The record stated he was drunk.
My grandmother was an educated woman. She was the product of the boarding school system of the 1920s, a system designed to assimilate the natives into Euro-American culture.
I became disabled during a period of time in which the state still had the right to institutionalize someone like me. In fact, they'd already signed the papers. I was going to be forced to be sent to an institution to live out my life.
Their creed was kill the Indian to save the child.
But thankfully, my parents fought for me, and I was able to come home.
In my undergrad, I had so many things I wanted to do that professors would blatantly tell me were not possible for me, because I was not someone that was good enough or someone that was clever enough or deserving enough of those opportunities.
In the same time, it was said at Montana State University, even though they had some programs and they'd had some students with disabilities, they were few and far between. My first day in the architecture department, the chair of the department came to me and said, you know, there's this whole new division and world that's opening up. It's called universal design, and I think you'd be perfect. I was so offended in my 18-year-old self to be told that I would only be, that would be the only area I would be able to work. So I was already put off by the program.
The educational process was not easy on a young Shoshone girl.
After I graduated, I couldn't even play my violin. I couldn't hold it without shaking. I just couldn't access the thing that was so important to me. Everything is so pristine. Everything is perfection in the classical music culture.
I think you'd be perfect, he said.
And if you're not that, then are you anything? And I think that messaging really sunk into me.
On one occasion, while attending the Washakie Day School, my grandmother's teacher made her stand on a chair in front of the other children and said, May, you are going to turn out to be just like these other children, sitting in the dirt and being useless for the rest of your life.
I dropped out of school and returned home. I told my parents, I just need to better define what it is I'm trying to do. I know that I want to work in the creative sector, but I don't yet know what that means.
I've always just kind of been like, there's more. There's more that I can do. And I just need someone to be able to see it. And then I think if they see it, then we can all do amazing things together.
Jody, that is beautiful. I mean, truly, just hearing it woven together like that. And that's just a small little snippet, but it really gives a sense of perspective on, I think these stories and how people have been impacted, right, by their lived experience here in Idaho.
And it's so fascinating how, you know, each of the stories on their own is powerful already. I mean, mm-hmm. Days of tears and laughter, you know, living with these words, but something happens when we mix them together. There's their own individual story, but there's also this collective story that happens, and the weight of the words changes. And, you know, we have also C. Marie Furman, who is an Idaho Indigenous writer, who's very poetic, and somehow pairing her words with some of the oral interviews that are more conversational, they both empower each other in a different way and elevate each other. And I find that absolutely amazing. And it's mm-hmm. such a thrill when it comes together and we get to hear. Of course, I'm very nervous when the storytellers read the script for the first time. I kind of want an immediate reaction because I just worry like, oh no, I've destroyed their story. So it's a huge relief when we all get together and they're like, no, yeah. This works. This is great.
So Jody, you mentioned in the very beginning of our conversation today that you're doing also something a little bit different this time, and that's having live music. So we've been hearing some clips of the music during our interview today. So tell us about some of the music that folks will be able to listen to as we hear some right now.
Well, I'm going to turn that over to Jessica Joy, who this is music from her project, and she'll be performing it live with her ensemble.
Yeah, so Jessica, tell us about this.
Yeah, the music that you heard and all the music that was performed on Tuesday night is from a show that I'm excited to be producing for the Morrison Center called Classical Queens, Our Time. I commissioned a wonderful composer from Texas named Cassidy Robinson over a year ago, and she created 20 original works for a moving orchestra that are very cinematic and allow the audience to follow through emotional journeys with what's happening on stage.
And when she says moving orchestra, this is not a poetic choice of words.
Okay.
The cellist was moving across the stage with their instrument.
What?
They are musicians in motion, literally.
Yes, we're innovating the orchestra.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how do you move a cello across the stage and play
the cello
at the same
has
time?
Straps.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. I was going to say that's some serious talent right there. Before we wrap up, I really would love to know from all of you what you hope folks take away from this. Jessica, let me start with you.
I think I would hope for the audience to feel just as connected with all seven of us from across the state of Idaho as I feel after reading all this beautiful work.
Blair, what about you? What's your hope for folks?
Well, I mean, I hope that it can transform our diverse backgrounds into sort of a collective mission for a brighter future.
And Michael, what are you hoping that people take away from the play?
Well, as you know, 26 years in the classroom teaching history, I used a lot of stories. I talked about his stories and her stories, and the kids would roll their eyes. But there are just so many different stories and experiences in Idaho. And I think if we share those and teach and learn about them, people who don't know their history, who have never heard of their history acknowledged, I think that if you feel included, you're inspired to learn more. And I think that's a powerful thing.
And Jody, what about you? I mean, I know you put your heart and soul into every one of these performances. So I've got about a minute and a half left. But really, what are you hoping that folks walk away from after Tuesday night?
Well, I think with this particular show, and you know, I'm guilty of this myself, I don't necessarily think of myself as an Idahoan. I kind of reduce myself to like, well, yeah, okay, I live in this state, but really I'm, you know, in Boise. And sometimes I might even say I'm in Garden City and really make it very small. And after this show, I kind of hope that the dialogue continues, that we continue to reach beyond our own communities and think of ourselves. I mean, today it's so hard. We just get forced to segment. you know, and only stay in our own little bubble. And this is an opportunity to reach out and think of ourselves as something bigger than just our own local star, you know, shine a little brighter together. And, you know, we always hope too that in listening to these stories, that it touches something inside of everyone who's listening, that they feel connected to them. And, you know, even though I've never lived in Potlatch or Coeur d'Alene or on a ranch in New Plymouth, there's something in each of these stories that I feel in my core. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not far from that. That's a part of me too.
Well, I want to thank all of you so much. We've been talking with Jody Eichelberger, the artistic director of Story Story Night, Michael Riley, a retired teacher who lives in Potlatch, Blair Williams, the owner of the Art Spirit Gallery, and Jessica Joy, a musician and creator of the show Classical Queens, Our Time. They'll be performing Starry Story Night, The Big Dipper, Tuesday at Jump in Boise. Thank you all for sharing your stories with us. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.